Blog Talk Radio.
Tribe Family Channel. I am the host of Tribe Family Channel and also the creator, yours truly, Beverly. You are invited to partake in this dynamic mix of mental stimulants from romantic writers to urban and chick lit. We will have it all here for your pleasure. Put the kids to bed and grab a friend. It's going to be a season of pleasure you're sure to remember. And this episode is brought to you by Girls Are Priceless. J.C. Gardner has a self-esteem movement that is bringing our young ladies to the forefront to proclaim their pricelessness, their uniqueness, and their genius. Visit girlsarepriceless.com today and be sure to express your genius. Ladies and gentlemen, I am so excited. We have the award-winning Electa Rome Parks here in the building. And before I introduce her, let me tell you just a little bit about her, and then she's going to fill in the blanks. Dubbed a book club favorite, avid readers have embraced Electa's novels as unforgettable, true-to-life characters that tackle prevalent and heavy-hitting issues. Electa is an award-winning, national best-selling author of several mainstream and erotica novels from Penguin Group, HarperCollins, and Kensington. Here to fill in all the blanks is Electa Hurst. Hey, sis, how are you?
Hey, Beverly, I'm fine. How are you?
I am blessed. I'm excited. You know, anytime I'm broadcasting live on Tribe Family Channel, it's another opportunity to talk to people like yourself and just to really have a wonderful conversation. So I'm ready to have it. Are you?
I'm ready too. Excited and ready.
All right. Well, I'm sure all of our listeners are. The phone lines are lighting up, so be sure to press 1 if you'd like to speak to Electa. Otherwise, she's ready to drop some gems on you. So, Electa, take us all the way back to the beginning when you first realized that you existed. Where were you? How old were you? And what was your world painted like?
Wow. Take it all the way back.
We're going to go back a couple of days ago.
Quite a while to when I realized that I wanted to be a writer and realized I was in love with writing and reading. Well, I can take that all the way back to when I was a little girl. I mean, those two things were always my passions. Reading and writing, though, you know, it's kind of like you can't have one without the other. And, you know, I was the little quiet, shy girl growing up. And reading was my escape because it took me on, you know, places all across the world, and I got a chance to meet new friends. I could just get lost between the pages of the books, and writing was the way I expressed myself. What I couldn't say verbally, I was able to express it in diaries and journals as I became a young woman. So that was always a part of me. That was just my way of expressing myself and my way of being me. I can't even see that not being a part of my life. But as far as when I decided that, hey, you know, I have to quit writing the short stories and the little plays and the little poetry and all of this and putting it in the back of my closet collecting dust, and I need to do something about this, was all the way back in 2001. That was when I made the decision.
Before we get to that, tell us, where were you growing up as a little girl?
Well, I am a Georgia native, so pretty much I've lived in Georgia my whole life. After college, I did move away for a while. But as far as my early years up through college, I actually, Georgia peach, which is very rare
peach
to find, is a true, genuine Georgia peach, but I am. True Southern girl.
All right. Yeah, cool. All right, and what schools did you attend? Shout out your schools and tell us a little bit about what type of student you were.
Okay, I'll take it to high school. As far as high school, I actually went to, it's called Rockdale County High School. And at the time, you know, I lived in a little small town. At the time, there were only two high schools, so, of course, huge rivals. So Rockdale County High School would be my shout out. And as far as the type of student I was, I mean, definitely an A student, graduated with honors. But again, you know, I was the if you ask anyone if they remembered Electa Rome back then, Electa Rome, they would remember me as being very studious, very smart, head always buried in a book. Very active. I belonged to lots of various clubs, and you know, from drama club to you name it, I was in all of those. So it was really weird that on one end, you know, I was this shy little girl, but yet I was part of the drama club and actually was in a couple plays, and so it was like I could kind of switch it on and off, and
yeah,
like I kind of became another person.
Right. Oh wow.
Yeah, so I think that's why, you know, I think it's all about just having this great big imagination, and I guess with writing and like with acting, you become someone else, and you can kind of go places where maybe you personally couldn't take it, and that's mm-hmm. just my rationale behind that.
All right.
And after that, after high school, after graduating with honors and just having a great high school career, I decided that I wanted to be a business major. And when I look back now, I'm like, I have no clue as to why I decided I wanted to be a business major. But,
we all
I guess
did
it,
that one. We
you know,
all
I,
did
I think
that
it was
one.
Okay. What did you say?
I was saying we all did that one. I think it was just being fed that, you know, the entrepreneurism, the, you know, when you're creative, like we are writers, poets, you know, people that are into the arts,
mm-hmm.
you think in terms of, you know, working for yourself and being independent, because you don't look in the, you know, classified or now on the internet and see, you, we didn't see a lot then of writers wanted, artists
exactly.
wanted, you know, that's
the
term starving artists. And
mm-hmm.
so I think we were all just naturally drawn to, okay, I want to get that business degree because
exactly.
that could take us, you know, wherever. But go ahead. I just wanted to back you up.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I think that was it. If that seemed stable and, you know, you're going to make some money in that. And so I went off to University of West Georgia. Back in the day, it was actually, and I'm aging myself here, but back in the day, it was actually West Georgia College, and now it's University of West Georgia. And mm-hmm. I was a business major, majored in marketing, never knowing that, you know, I would really, really be able to put that marketing degree to use years
mm-hmm.
later
mm-hmm.
once I decided that, hey, I'm gonna write a novel and was able to actually put it to really great use. And those
wow.
were kind of my early years, Rockdale
mm-hmm.
in West Georgia.
All right, all right. All right, Miss Georgia Peach. Okay, so are you still in that region of the world today? Do they
I am. Very briefly, I lived in Chicago, and, you know, the Southern girl in Chicago in December didn't work.
But I found myself in all places
in Chicago for a while. So
wow.
From there, I found myself living in North Carolina for many, many years and eventually made it back to Georgia.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Yeah, I would be crying, Lord have mercy, Jesus, please, in the Chicago cold, okay? And I'm in California, you know, we do get as low as 41 degrees out here, but, you know, that's even in the 30s, you know, I've been in, like, 34-degree weather, and that's just about as much as I'm going to tolerate before I start praying and speaking in tongues.
Okay. I definitely feel you on that, Beverly. I really do.
Okay.
So I had to make my way back to the South. I say I'm a true Southern girl. So I made my way back to the South and raised my family here, and I've been here been here since.
Well, praise God, praise God. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, this is yours truly, Beverly, live on Tribe Family Channel, and I am speaking with the award-winning Electa Rome Parks. This episode is brought to you by Girls Are Priceless. J.C. Gardner wants our girls to know that they're priceless, and they need to protect their mind, body, and soul. So visit girlsarepriceless.com today and make your pledge, young ladies. All right. So, Electa, back in Georgia. So take us back to where you first realized that, you know, you're a writer, you're a kid, you're growing up. And what type of writing did you do, say, in school? You know,
Well, I did a lot. I call it angry poetry because whenever I was into my feelings and upset about something, you know, I could sit down and pen a poem or whatever. But also my angry poetry days. And I grew up with a lot of cousins. There were, you know, like a lot of girls in the family. We were kind of all stair-stepped around the same age. And so, you know, most kids would go outside and play, you know, back in the day, we'd go outside and play. And I would actually, you know, have written a little short story or like a little play, little mini play. And we would actually go outside and we would doubt the scenes from my play or my little short story. And then at church, I used to do like little plays like Easter and Christmas. You know, I would do little plays around that time. So I was kind of like all over the board. And then I was, you know, always kept a diary. And it was so funny when I look back because I would rate my days, you know. Oh, today was an A-plus day, you know. I made a, you know, it was like really childish, but you know, I was a child.
Yeah, I like that.
Or such and such spoke to me today. He's like really cute, you know. So in the diary and then later, you know, I kept a journal kind of from kind of my last 2 years of college and growing, you know, first job, that sort of thing. So I was, you know, just kind of, I guess, really experimenting kind of all over the place, just writing whatever, you know, whatever I felt.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Love the girl stuff. You know, that's getting those emotions out. You know, you're growing up, you have, you know, lots of, you know, family and, you know, it can be a crowd growing up when you're coming into your own and you're trying to evoke, you know, emotion. So I can understand writing, having the diary. I had the diary and, you know, the little key that you really didn't need, okay, but, you know.
Exactly.
Make it seem like it was locked, or, you know, I had a brother back then and, you know, I wanted him to think it was locked. But truly, that little poor metal key and that little...
I know, get an app in or something and open it. You know, that's all it took.
But so that's, you know, usually where we start, you know, expressing ourselves, our emotions. So I love the, you know, the way you got your anger out. And that's something that, you know, I could see reviving. You know, we talk about... today's industry, which we'll get to later. But, you know, that's something I could see reviving for today's girls. All right. And so that's the kind of writing in the early years. So college, you're, you know, small or business management. When do you make the shift from business to writing?
That, you know, you're asking like really great questions, and some, and I have never in an interview, and I've done lots of interviews, never really taken it back, kind of, you know, this the sequence, so to speak. So
this is very interesting
because I have to actually think, when did I make that that transition? Because to be honest, there was a period there, of course, like during college when you really, you know, well, at least when I really didn't have time to focus on writing, and really hadn't at that point in my life even thought that, hey, this could possibly be something I could do as a career or to make money from. You know, I hadn't arrived yet to see anything other than the so-called, you know, the classic, the classical or the author's novels that were considered the classics from back in the day. And at the time, you know, some of that was required reading, and it wasn't, it was speaking to me, but it was not speaking to me until later on when I was introduced to Terry McMillan. And that's when I think the shift came, was when I saw contemporary fiction that spoke to where I was or where family members or friends or people of that nature were at that point in life, and that I could relate to, and that I could picture, you know, a friend or a relative in her characters. And it was, it was, you know, it was contemporary, and I think that was when I finally decided, and even the book, you know, I always talk about how the book that, that pulled me in and just kind of was opened that door for me was Disappearing Acts. I read Terry McMillan's Disappearing Acts back in the day, and I started trying to, I think at the time, I'm not sure how many books she had out, but I did go out and try to find, you know, everything she had written, and I think there were at least maybe one or two more at that point in time, and I just could not get enough of her. And I, you know, started following her, and then, of course, when she had the great commercial success of Waiting to Exhale becoming, you know, a movie, you know, that was kind of like, wow, you know, she, this, you know, this is like my, you know, I'm like really looking up to her. This is my idol. You know, I'm just following her. And that's when I decided that, hey, you know, maybe I can do something, you know, with this manuscript that's been sitting in the closet collecting dust, and maybe I should be taking this a little more seriously, because at that point I knew that it wasn't going away. I knew that that was a part of me. I knew that was something that brought me joy, and even though no one had read anything as far as the actual first manuscript, I knew that was something that was going to be a part of me. And I think with her success, that kind of gave me that push to really work on it and start letting some people read it. And it kind of went from there.
Wow. All right, all right. Okay, and so you started letting some people read your work. You're getting feedback. And who pitched your first proposal to when you, when it came to, you know, the Big Five?
Okay, well, actually, it's really funny because the very first manuscript that I wrote, it never saw the light of day. The first manuscript that was actually published was actually my second manuscript. And I basically didn't even pitch it to anyone initially because I had started going around doing, you know, networking. I'd started going around to literary events, going around to various conferences, and I was at one conference, and I cannot remember the name of it because I believe it's still around to this day, but it was actually held here in Atlanta, and it was a weekend event, and I went, and there was a it's called a print-on-demand. There was a print-on-demand company there that gave an hour presentation. And at the time, I'm like, okay, this would be a good way for me to kind of test the water, so to speak, because basically they did everything. You know, you gave them the manuscript, and they did everything else for you. Of course, you paid a pretty penny, but they did everything else for you. But I saw that as an opportunity. I'm sorry?
I said, you better say that. We paid a pretty penny.
Exactly, exactly. You definitely paid for what they gave you, and you probably paid two and three times more for what they gave you. But, you know, it's all about going through the fire, and you have to live and learn. And I think even if I had to do it over, I would maybe even still go that route, because it was able to put the book out there, even though it was totally overpriced. But I was able to put the book out there and get the type of feedback that I needed from people, you know, other than family members and friends. And when I saw that the book was, you know, doing really well, and that the company was, you know, telling me that people were calling in to order, and, you know, print on demand is where basically they don't print the book until you order and pay for the book. And then it takes another week to 2 weeks for the book to arrive. So I quickly saw that definitely was not going to work. If I wanted to keep any buzz going, that I was going to have to go, you know, go another route. And so I had been following Kimberla Lawson Roby. And, in fact, there was an article in Essence at that time that told her story of how, you know, she had quit her six-figure job, and her and her husband, you know, with him being very supportive, she decided to go the self-publishing route. And just, you know, basically it was an article about how she did it. And so I started following her, and I purchased the book, the self-publishing book that she told me about. And so I then transitioned from POD over to being a self-published author. And with the book that I purchased, you know, it pretty much laid out everything, you know, exactly what you should be doing in month one, month two, et cetera. And I had my business plan, had my marketing plan, you know, I had everything in place, and I basically just started hit the road. You know, I was working at a bank at the time, and 5 o'clock on Friday, I was gone. I mean, you name it. You know, not just locally. You know, I was all over the place. You know, Midwest.
Right.
You know, wherever there was some type of event going on, I was there with my suitcase of books. And,
wow.
And that's what I did every single weekend. And I would literally have something going Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I don't care if it was a book club meeting, a festival, a writing group, you know, going around to all the independent stores in my area, even driving, you know, a few miles out to visit the independent stores, to hand out flyers, bookmarks. You know, just every weekend I made a point that I was going to be out there, and I was going to be visible, and I was going to network, and I was going to talk about my first book, The Ties That Bind. And it worked. I was out there for two years and 3 months, 2 years and 3 months, making the rounds.
Wow.
And I loved it.
Yes, now, that's doing the groundwork. Go ahead. You loved it.
Yeah, well, I love it. You know, when you hear about, like, some of these artists, that, like, you know, maybe a singer or someone like that, and they talk so fondly of the beginnings, like when you kind of have that fire, you know, you have that fire, and you have people out there who got that same fire underneath them, and you feel like, you know, like you're just creating and just making a difference. And I mean, it's just really hard to describe. It's just like this feeling where you know, you're making a difference. And at the time, you know, we were saying, you know, we were part of this new renaissance of, you know, black artists, and everyone was so supportive and giving tips and helping each other and promoting each other's books. And it was just a great time. And you know, this is back, we're talking about, you know, 2001, 2002. And so even now, you know, I still have such fond memories of all the people that I met, you know, back in the day, and to see the successes of some of these same people. You know, some, you know, have stopped writing for whatever reasons, but then there are others that have gone on to great successes. And, you know, I was, you know, part of that. And I did that for 2 years and 3 months. And And I always say, you know, things happen for a reason. I'm a very, very firm believer that things happen for a reason, and that everything is, you know, is divinely planned. And what happened is that I had been working for a bank for almost 12 years, got laid off from the bank, and had a nice little severance package, so I wasn't, like, immediately worried. And so I was able to actually continue to write and continue to promote. But I realized that, you know, self-publishing it can be very expensive. And, you know, I'm laid off, and I'm laid off from a bank, and this is when the banks were going through their trials and tribulations, and I'm trying to find employment. And at the exact time that my severance package, and I do mean it, like the exact week that my severance package was going to end, and I had made the decision that I was going to have to try to promote my book to, you know, one of the major houses or editors or someone in that arena, because I could not afford to continue to self-publish, I received an email, and I'll never forget it. I was sitting at the computer, as I did every day, as I searched for my jobs in the morning and wrote in the evenings, and I received this email. It was later. I was in front of the computer, but it was later that day on a Friday. And the email was basically stating that, you know, it was from a literary agent. They said they had been following my rising career. They knew about the ties that bind and wanted to know if I had an agent, if I had literary representation. And if not, that they would be interested in speaking with me. And so I kind of, you know, read it and really didn't think anything about it, because ironically, I had just that week or a few days before had mentioned to one of my best girlfriends that, you know, this, you know, I can't continue to self-publish. It's too expensive, and I, you know, I haven't found a job yet, and I'm going to have to look for an agent. And so I thought that it was kind of her playing a joke on me at the time, because the timing was just too close, and I thought it was her. So I kind of ignored the email, you know, and just kept doing what I was doing. And so later that evening, you know, I kind of got the email back out again, and I went to, you know, looked at the site, the website address or whatever, and realized it was a legitimate agency. And so by this time, you know, it was a little late, and so I had to wait until that following, I had to go the entire weekend and wait until that Monday to make the phone call. And so, you know, the whole weekend I'm just like going crazy, because I'm like, I could have called earlier, but I didn't do it. I didn't think it was legitimate. So first thing that Monday morning, I was, you know, as far as when, because the agent was actually out in California, so I had to wait until it was their, you know, 8 o'clock or 8:30 their time. And I made the phone call, and we literally talked on the phone for like 3 hours.
Wow.
He went over everything, you know, what I had been doing, my business plan, my marketing plan, my goals for the future, why did I enjoy writing, you know, we just really just went over everything. And to make a long story short, basically he told me that he thought he could get a deal for me, and would I be willing to let him represent me. And of course, the answer was yes. And he literally 30 days after we had that conversation, he had literally gotten me an unknown writer. And, of course, now this is back in the day when the deals were really good, and you know, that was the situation. He had literally gotten me a six-figure deal, a three-book six-figure deal with a major publishing
company. Wow, awesome.
And that was like the – you know, as they say, that was the best day of my life.
That was the breakthrough.
The best day
of
my life. I mean, that was a dream. You know, that's what authors dream of. And and so I started out with Penguin, Penguin Group, and the imprint of Penguin was New American Library. And I had always been like I loved Eric Jerome Dickey, and just the fact that, you know, that was his house, Penguin, and everything. So it was just great. And that was my beginning.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. All right, so when you got the check in the mail, how did that feel? Tell us about the check.
You know, it really, well, of course I didn't get it all at one time, you know.
right, but you did get that.
Installments, it really, I mean, just to know that I was getting paid off of something that was all me, just a figment of my imagination, and to know that there were readers out there that were loving my stories and reading my stories and emailing me and actually writing me, you know, because I sending letters to my P.O. box And it's and even to this day, you know, it's just a great feeling to be confirmed, to validate it when, you know, you've written something and you've put your all into it, and you'll have a reader, you know, come up to you at a book signing and they're talking to you about a character, you know, like it's a person, you know, like it's, you know, asking you all. I mean, I still have people to this day that will come up and ask me about the very first book now that came out as far as under Penguin back in 2004, mm-hmm. and will ask me about those characters, like I can tell them, you know, oh yeah, they're living in New York.
They're retired now.
And so
I love it.
I mean, there's nothing. There's just no feeling. I can't even begin to describe or even write that feeling.
Wow, that is so awesome. That is so awesome. Well, you know, I can't describe the feeling of talking to you and hearing your wonderful story and seeing that the phone lines are all lit up. I see all of you callers, and we're going to get to some of the callers. But first, I would like for you to read a excerpt of your choosing and just, in, you know, wet the lines up a little bit with some Electorome Parks before we open up the phone lines and let our callers talk to you.
Okay, well, how long do you want me to go, Beverly, as far as what I'm reading?
How long you let the spirit lead you, however long you
okay.
feel.
Okay, well, as I was telling you earlier, kind of offline, that, you know, basically the last couple of years I've kind of been out of the loop because of some personal issues, and the last book that dropped was actually 2 years ago, and that was When Baldwin Loved Brendan. That was my my last title that dropped about 2 years ago. But I think what I'm going to share with you, a little bit from my best-selling and most popular novel to date. I've actually written 10 novels and one short story.
Congratulations.
And to date, most popular has been Diary of a Stalker. And it was so popular that pretty much I had to go out and write two other books because people were constantly asking about these particular characters. And, you know, I try not to show any favoritism towards my babies, as I call them, but it's just something about a really bad girl type, you know, you got that love-hate relationship that I find that I really like writing about. So I'm going to read a little bit of, in case there are, you know, some people that would hopefully want to check out Diary of a Stalker, if you haven't already. So I'm going to read just a little bit about from that. I'm going to introduce the two main characters and just read from there.
All right.
Okay. So Diary of a Stalker, I'm going to start out the prologue. Darkness surrounded her with a thick cloak of protection. Shadows bounced and ricocheted off the walls. She embraced it with open arms, like welcoming a long-lost friend back into the fold. Silence. She felt safe now. While most people gravitated towards the light, she embraced the night, the cover of darkness. From experience, she knew that deeds not meant to be seen or heard were best carried out in the deep, secretive confines of the night. Quietly and painfully slow, she crept out of the shadows, cautiously pushed clothes aside, opened the closed closet door, and exited with precision. Her footsteps were deliberate and calculated. She knew every creak and crevice from memory. She walked with the confident stride of someone who was comfortable with her surroundings. Ever so cautiously, she pushed the closet door open, just an inch, stopped and listened, then another inch. Then another. There was silence except for the even sound of breathing. She knew he was a deep sleeper, but she still didn't want to take any chance of him waking up. Tonight wouldn't be the night when she became careless. Even though she had been here before numerous times, this was the first time with him being inside the house. With the slinkiness and sneakiness of a feline stalking her prey, she moved from inside the closet to the master bedroom, stopped just short of the massive bed, and simply watched. Watched and reveled in the closeness they shared. Being in the same space with him thrilled her. She had to force herself to breathe because he took her breath away every time. He did it for her. If only he would love her back. Even if it was only with a quarter of the love she felt for him, she'd still be satisfied. He slept on his back, breathing evenly, legs sprawled wide with a thin sheet pulled up to his waist. She knew that underneath he was completely nude. It took all she had not to reach out and touch him. She was so close, yet so far away. In her mind, he was absolutely perfect. Perfect for her. Her eyes eagerly and greedily took him in, ravishing him with her deep carnal yearning. Why couldn't he simply love her back? This question played out in her mind over and over again each and every day, crippling her, crushing her confidence, making her crazy, crazy like a loon. Sometimes she hated him with a devastating passion. Those were the days she wanted to do something bad to him, wanted to hurt him, make him pay for not loving her. Tonight, she simply watched. She stood there for hours and watched him peacefully sleep. If he had awakened and looked a few feet in front of him, he would have easily spotted her. Her desire to be near him overrode her fear of being caught. Once she had her fill of him, she silently crept down the stairwell and out the front door, quietly closing it behind her. The next morning, he would be none the wiser. Only the faint smell of her perfume would remain. He'd imagine he dreamt of a dark figure towering over him, watching and waiting, waiting until it was time. And that was the prologue from Diary of a Stalker.
Wow. Oh, my God. Electa Rome Parks, ladies and gentlemen, live on Tribe Family Channel, Literary Festival 2016. You heard it for yourself, and that was just something else. Got me
Thank
holding
you.
My breath. Don't let me get caught creeping and sliding and slinking through here. You can feel it, right? You can absolutely feel it. So that was awesome. Congratulations to you and all of your successes.
Thank you
And
so much.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hear a word from our sponsors and come our sponsor. J.C. Gardner, she is our next guest in the second hour, but she has a motivating message for all the ladies. And since this is that type of evening, we want to let her rip with her sponsorship. And we'll be right back with our callers.
Hi there. This is J.C. Gardner, author and inspirational speaker. I'm giving a shout out to all my ladies. How y'all doing out there? I'm coming to you from the Tribe Family Channel. I have one question for you. What are you waiting for? That's right. What are you waiting for? I know that inside of you is a dream, is your passion, is something you know that you should be doing, but for some reason you're stuck. You haven't taken the next step. You haven't moved forward. Maybe somebody told you that you shouldn't do it, or you can't do it, or you're not worthy to do it. But I'm here to tell you that you are, that you have a destiny, and you have a pathway that you must follow in order to live to your fullest greatness. Bigger is he that lives in you than lives in the world. You are the head and not the tail. I'm here to tell you that you can be an overcomer and achieve your dreams. Surround yourself with the right people, get in the right circles, and take the next step to making it happen. You are a genius. All of us are individuals, and nobody can live our story the way that we do. That's what makes you so genius. Genius is common, and I'm here to encourage you today, my sisters, that you can be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was J.C. Gardner, our sponsor and the CEO of Girls Are Priceless. Electa, are you ready to talk to some of these callers?
I am. I'm excited. I love speaking with readers.
Well, let's see if they're ready to talk to you, because some people chime in and they just want to listen, but we'll check in. Caller 706, area code, caller 706, are you there?
Oh,
area code 706. Hello?
Hello?
All right. Hello, caller 706.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, who are we speaking with?
Oh, my goodness. Girl, this is Karen D. Neal. I didn't even realize I wanted to call in and listen to my girl. Electra, oh, my God. You know what? I grew up reading you, girl. I used to be at work.
Thank you.
I love your work.
Thank you
I
so
love,
much.
I love it. The ties that God. I didn't realize I was on my. Oh, my goodness. This is so embarrassing, y'all.
Well, I'm glad to hear your voice and for you to tell me that you've read my works. I mean, that means so much.
I love it. Thank you. I love it. I look up to you so much. In fact, you are one of the people that was a motivator to me and without even knowing it. I started writing 3 years ago, wrote my first book. I'm 6 books deep in now.
Oh,
I never get a chance to read much anymore. But I love you. I'm telling you, girl, you to Bryce and Mia, forever a love song.
Oh, you do. I mean, that's taking it back to the times and mine. Wow.
I
appreciate your comments so much. I mean, there's nothing like hearing from the readers. And of course, you know that being a writer yourself. So thank you so much for those kind words. And just hopefully I'll have something new coming out soon. Hopefully it's just been going through some things. You know, I keep it real.
I've been going through some things lately. But, hey, that is what makes our writing so much better. When we go through those things and when we come out, then we're able to really express ourselves and really give the readers something to really crave.
Right.
So,
yeah, well, I got a lot to tell.
Well, you keep on doing it. And listen, I had an event. It's right in Thompson, which is an hour and a half away from Atlanta, last year, August, called Toasting with the Authors 2015.
Mm-hmm.
I would love for you to come to the one to Toasting with the Authors 2016 this year. It's going to be in August. And
okay.
I will get the details to you. I had
I would love to. I mean, I love you know, being out and about, and that's something I haven't done as much as I usually do last year or so. So please send me that information. I would love to.
I sure will. I sure will. And thank you so much
and
for
make
all the
sure
work
you,
done.
And Karen, make sure you CC tribefamilychannel@gmail.com. So that we're in the loop. I want to know what you're doing, and maybe we need to have you come on Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival.
Exactly.
Oh, for sure. I will check you out. I just happened to be going to my Facebook page and saw that Electra was on. I'm like, ooh, I got to listen to this. I didn't realize I was on, so I'm glad that I did get on up to talk to her.
Yes, thank you.
Okay,
thank you, Karen. All right.
Oh,
thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
All right. That's awesome. See, people just like, wow, they're familiar with your work from way back in the day.
I know. That's really
just like
that's so much love when I hear that. I mean, she remembered me, and that's, you know, that's something about that, you know, that first one, that first book, and that's always the one that you kind of, you know, kind of hold that special place, you know, in your heart, because that's that first one that you get out there. And Mia was, you know, the main character from The Ties That Bind.
Wow, awesome. All right, well, let's go to another caller. We're going to take caller area code 516. Are you there, caller 516?
Yes, caller 516 is here, Beverly. It's Carol Mackey shouting out my girl.
Wow, Carol.
Hi,
how are you?
Hey, ladies, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Oh, that's so great. Electra, you are so sweet. I said, you know what? You are one of the very, very special authors in my heart because you are as sweet and kind as you are talented. And I really have been blessed to have followed your career. You know, I have many of your books in Black Expressions. Many of them were. Yeah,
I always proudly say I was was a Black Expressions author. I always definitely you know, put that out there. And I know back in the day, whenever there were events in which you were there and I was there, you would always make a point of pointing out, you know, any Black Expressions authors that were in the room, and that was, you know, just really so appreciated, and it really made a difference in really getting my name out there, and I'm just so glad that, you know, here it is years later that I don't see you a lot, but, you know, just the fact that you called in tonight and it's being supportive, that means the world.
Oh, thank you so much, sweetheart. You just really have, you know, your books are riveting. You know, they're compelling. The audience, you know, our members back then loved them. You were always a fan favorite. So, and you're one of my favorites, too, because you're always so sweet. I see you at the book club conference, and we always hug and say, ah, you know.
Well, thank you.
Yes, ma'am, and I wish you all, and I hope to see you in Atlanta if you're going to the book club conference this year.
I may stop by, because I was honored to be one of the featured authors last year. That was one of the events I did. It was the National Book Club Conference, and I did Black Girls Rock in Maryland. And those were the only two really big events that I did last year. So I'm really trying to get back out here, you know, after some things that I've gone through. But hopefully I will return and get back into the swing of things.
Yes. Well, I don't know what you're going through, but I'm going to put you on my prayer list.
Well, thank you.
Alexa. And, you know, whatever it is, you know, God's going to see you through it. He brought you to it, and he's going to see you through it.
Exactly.
So,
and I definitely believe that.
Amen. Amen. So you have a
amen
good
to that.
Good talking to you, too. My Beverly, kisses, kisses, kisses to my Bev.
Hugs and kisses, Carol. Hugs and kisses. Electa, before Carol goes, I want you to know that I interviewed Carol last week on Voices of Wisdom last Thursday. We had an amazing 2 hours, and that can be found at tribefamilychannel.com. Click on the tab Voices of Wisdom 5, and you'll see the
I'm
link
sure much,
to
much love
Carol's interview. Oh, it was so amazing, Carol. She knows she's the queen and the bomb.
Oh, of course.
Oh.
Everyone knows that, exactly.
Oh, I don't know about that. Thank you, my love. I have a lot of love for you. That's it.
Love is your heart.
All right,
love
so you guys have a great night. I love you, and I'll keep listening.
Okay, thank
All
you.
Right, thank you so much.
Thank
All right,
you,
God bless you. Bless her heart. Bless her heart. That was so wonderful of them to call in. And, you know, I just wanted to remind everyone that you are live on Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival 2016. I am speaking with Electa Rome Parks, the award-winning author of so many books, too numerous to name, but she has.
And hopefully I will be able to add even more to that list, hopefully.
You will be adding more to that list, no doubt. It is, you know, obvious that your work is in demand and that, you know, you have a following that's anticipating. And it's really good to hear them calling in and, you know, really connecting and wanting you to be at these events. And that just goes to show, you know, the popularity and the fact that they're missing you, missing the characters. And, you know, here we go with, like, where are they now, so to speak.
Right, and I really miss it. I mean, I think just meeting and greeting the readers is such a is part of it, and that's been the part that's been one of my favorite parts. I'm very laid back. You know, still you know a little quiet. You know, I wouldn't classify myself as being shy, but still a little quiet and laid back. But I love to get in front of the readers, and I can just talk and talk and talk about you know writing and the industry, and that's just one of my favorite things to do. And I want to tell if I have time to tell this quick little story to prove to you how much I love my readers.
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
You can stop me if you have to. My very very first book that came out, The Ties That Bind. You know, we're talking about years ago. I'm in a bookstore and I'm with one of my girlfriends and we've gone out there to pass out bookmarks or whatnot. And I'm walking around the store waiting for the person to finish with a customer, and I just happen to glance down, and I see this lady in the store, and in her hand, she's headed toward the register with my book, The Ties That Bind.
Oh, wow.
And so
girl,
and this is the first time I'd ever seen anyone actually, you know, purchase the book, and I'm there, and they're purchasing the book. And so me and my girlfriend in the middle of the store start screaming, and we run over to the lady, and we're pointing to the book, and the lady thinks that we were, like, two crazies. because, you know, she doesn't know, you know, I'm the author of the book. And then so the bookstore owner, she comes over and she's like, oh, I just, you know, she, no, they're fine. You know, this is the author. And it was just hilarious. But I was so excited that, you know, she had bought my book.
Right. That is awesome. That is so awesome. And, you know, we do have another caller holding, and I think I recognize this number. And it's funny because you're talking about your first book, and she is right at the pushing point of giving birth to her baby. And it's very exciting. So before we use up all of your hour, Aletta, I just want to tell you that it's been an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to speak with you. And I have a, you know, not as funny of a story, but I can remember always asking my kids, go inside of the store and ask them if they have gumbo for the soul, right? They'd be like, no. Go in there and ask them, you want to eat? You better go in there and ask them if they have gumbo for the soul up in here. So it was funny the first time I saw gumbo for the soul on the bookshelves, and I was like, you know, and I had to, you know, pick it up and, you know, turn it to the back. And as the lady was assisting me, I said, does this look familiar? And she was like, oh, you know, that's you. So that was kind of fun right there. You know, it's always fun when you see your first baby. They're all special, yes. So
exactly.
I have a lady that I mentor, and her name is Stephanie, and I would like to introduce you to her. Her line is open. And so,
okay.
Stephanie, please say hello to the award-winning, incomparable Electa Rome Parks. Electa, meet Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie. Stephanie,
are you there? Erico 209? Okay, she may be have muted the line and chose to hold and just listen. But at some point, you know, we'll have her come back around and make the circuit on Tribe Family Channel when she drops her first book. So in conclusion to your show, what advice would you give to the newcomers, on the uprise that are looking at a different industry than the one that, you know, first welcomed you?
Right. You're right. It's a very different industry. But I think still, just as far as advice, I would still say to one thing, just never give up. You know, hold on to your dreams, hold on to your passions. You know, just let the naysayers go and just, you know, just never give up. Just keep at it. And, you know, one no is not the end of the world. One rejection is not the end of the world. Also, mm-hmm. I would suggest just really networking. That was one thing I tried to do from the very beginning, is just, you know, getting around like-minded people who have a passion and love for reading and writing, and just, you know, just getting out there, trying to identify a mentor, and just being out there in the mix, you know, kind of getting your name out there and being visible. Again, find a mentor, you know, reach out to someone that you can, or several people that you can ask questions, because you want to try not to go through, make mistakes, and a lot of times, you know, they can give you tips or whatever not to go through maybe some of the mistakes or do some of the things that they did wrong, or even just to, you know, kind of tell you, you know, how to maneuver your way through the industry. So just try to locate a mentor. And study the craft. You know, for some people, I do realize for some people that, you know, it is, can be just, you know, they think it's a way to make a lot of money, which is, in most cases, is not the case. But you know, for the people that are truly, truly passionate about reading, I keep saying reading, about writing and really, you know, putting a quality product out there, you know, something that can stand the test of time and get new readers and bring people into the fold. So I think that means you have to continue to really grow in your writing, and that means, you know, really studying and just continuing to try to be the best and making the next novel better than the last novel. And I think that's very, very important. And those are just some of the things that I did and I continue to try to do. to this day. And I think those have been part of, you know, my success is being able to stay out there as long as I have.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And we didn't touch on your career with HarperCollins or Kensington. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, with HarperCollins, the imprint that I wrote one book under HarperCollins was actually called Avon Fire. And it was a new imprint, and they wanted to start it out with an anthology. And so basically it was myself and four other African-American writers, and we all were kind of different genres. And we came together to do an anthology, and we actually made history because we were the first African-American writers to actually write for that particular imprint. And so it was
awesome.
Called These Are My Confessions, and that was my HarperCollins experience with that particular imprint.
As far as
Kensington, that was through Urban Renaissance, and primarily those were some of my latter books. My last four books were through Kensington Urban Renaissance, and of course the best selling to date, The Diary of a Stalker, was through them.
Wow, awesome, awesome, awesome. And so for our listeners that want to catch up with Electa today, where can they find you?
Well, I'm active on social media, probably not as active as a lot of authors are, because I'm basically Facebook, and I have my website, which is under my name, electaromeparks.com, and I probably need to update it a bit, but it does have all my titles and a synopsis, and actually I think the first chapters are out there if you want to, you know, kind of read the first chapters of all 10 novels, and has links.
Wow.
Where you can actually go in order. So that's so basically my website, and again, I'm on Facebook. I have my own the personal page, Electa Rome Parks, which I probably stay on more than I stay on the fan page, which actually I update, you know, just what's going on, tours, new books, you know, any totally writing is on that page, but I probably stay on the personal page more. And that's really,
okay.
Really it. I don't even want to give out my Twitter, because I really don't stay on Twitter that much, to be honest. And hopefully all this will be changing, and I will be a little more active. But we know it can take up a lot of time. It's almost like a job in itself to kind of man all the different social sites.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you've heard it for yourself, ladies and gentlemen, live on Tribe Family Channel, the incomparable Electa Rome Parks. And I just appreciate you so much for being here and taking up, you know, you could have been doing anything, but you chose to be here. And I just, you know, I appreciate you taking the time out. I'll be looking forward to, you know, catching up on all things Electa, and I'll be also hitting you up because, you know, we had a little talk in the green room, and so we're going to follow up, and definitely I'd like to have you stay tuned for our next exciting guest. She is the CEO of Girls Are Priceless. Her name is Gardner, and we're going to be speaking with her right after this song break. So if you'll stay with us,
thank you so much, Beverly.
To have you. And thank you so much, Electa. All right, one moment, y'all.
If I kiss, if I held you tight in the morning light, yeah. Would you mind if I said how I felt in the leaving light again? Cause I never ever felt this way in my heart.
welcome to part two of Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival, Love, Lust, and Lovers, live on Tribe Family Channel. This second half of our show is going to be discussing our next guest, J.C. Gardner. Excuse me, J.C. Gardner. J.C. Gardner is the CEO of Girls Are Priceless. You heard the sponsorship that she so eloquently gave us. And so before I introduce J.C., a.k.a. Jackie Gardner, let me tell you a little bit about her, and she's going to fill in the blanks. Ever since the age of 12, J.C. Gardner has aspired to be an author. Writing stories became an escape, a way for her imagination to come alive on the handwritten pages of steno pads, notebooks, and journals. A closet writer for many years due to a series of unfortunate events when it came to sharing her writing. A cloud of self-doubt would follow that it wasn't worthy or good enough. It would stay buried deep within a drawer, a satchel, or just locked up in her mind. An extrovert by nature, slowly but surely her love of writing seeped into the homemade greeting cards, personal poems for friends, song lyrics, and, of course, lots of stories. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I would like to welcome J.C. Jackie Gardner. Hi, Jackie. How are you?
Hi, Beverly. How are you? I'm so blessed to be here with you again. This is an awesome platform for all authors and the work that you do.
Oh, bless God, bless God. You know, this is my ministry, JC, and I'm so thankful and grateful to have you not only as part of the Tribe Family Channel, Gumbo for the Soul International Family, but to also speak to you and to, you know, have your voice shared on our platform. So we had a wonderful time listening to your sponsorship. I want to thank you once again for sponsoring this particular episode of Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival, and I want to invite our listeners to definitely visit your site and find out all about Girls Are Priceless. So, Jackie, take us back to the beginning. We know that we're going to be discussing your book, Sinful Liaisons, and we're hoping that you will be able to read an excerpt. So tell us, when did you start writing in this genre? Because, you know, we have other shows where we've discussed your writing, but when did you start writing in this genre? And take us back to the beginning of, your writing career.
Oh, sure. I have been writing fiction since the age of 12. It was a really hot summer, and my girlfriend and I were visiting my grandmother in New York, and after about 3 or 4 days of being there, we were there for the week, we got bored, and I suggested that we write stories, and she was like, oh, okay. So we got our little notepads and stuff, and I was writing away. I thought she was too, and then after a while, I said, let's share what we have. Her pages was blank, and mine were filled with the beginnings of a story called Rat's Feast.
With the beginning of the story called what?
It was called Rat's Feast. I guess in a genre today would be horror. It would be a horror story today, but it was
wow.
My first story was Rat's Feast. And after that, I've been writing ever since. I just absolutely loved writing. I was an only child for 10 years, so I had a lot of imaginary friends and imaginary people that had lives, they had thoughts, they had their own style, they came with their own rhythm. So when they would get to me,
they found their way to your pages, huh?
That's exactly right. They always had a story to tell. You know, they always had a story to tell. They always had something to say, you know. So as I got older, they just followed me around in different ways, you know. So I've been actually writing fiction for, I guess, over 30 years.
Wow. Well, congratulations. And so
thank you.
Tell us about Sinful Liaisons, that title in itself, and then your picture. When I found that picture, I said, okay, so this is the perfect picture because you have all these different beautiful pictures, but this one looked particularly sassy that I used for Sinful Liaisons. I said, yeah, this is the perfect one right here. This is not for the cutesy girls are priceless. This is for the sassy grown folks. So tell us a little bit about Sinful Liaisons. Tell us about those characters, and then we're going to have you read a little bit.
Sinful Liaisons is actually my first full-blown novel that I wrote in my early 20s. I wrote it a really long time ago, and it was because one day this real fine-looking white boy came up on me, and he was like, yo, Jackie, I got a story for you. And I'm like, all right. I'm surprised that you're here right now because usually my characters show up at inopportune times on the subway, in the supermarket, when I'm walking the street. And I'm like, okay, well, we could talk. And he's like, no, I got to tell you this story. It's deep. You got to listen to it. Let me tell you what happened to me. And I was like, all right. And he told me that his name was David Jarconi. And I was like, okay, David, what's going on with you? He's like, well, I hooked up with this, and unbeknownst to me, me and her had the same type of past, except I didn't know that mine was coming back to haunt me. I was like, oh, okay, let me sit down and take a listen to this. So all of these characters came immediately. It was like one of the fastest books I've ever written because they all were there with me. They were there with me all the time, 24/7. The book is really long. I didn't intend for it to be that long. It's like 500 pages of lust, suspense, mayhem, treachery, lies, deceit. It's like a big family drama and a saga all wrapped up into one, and then I have nerve to have a part two.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that sounds exciting. It sounds suspenseful, and it sounds intriguing. So drop an excerpt on us, if you will.
All right, I'm going to drop an excerpt from Chapter 8 because it talks about one of my favorite characters in the book. So the ghetto of the city, located down under the filth, the tenements, the welfare working class struggling for that handout, where the broken down cars litter the streets and shots ring out one or two times a night, sometimes finding their target, sometimes just for fun, where rats and roaches found their haven, some with four legs and some with two, some male and some female. The ghetto, where the heat index automatically doubles because Negroes draw heat and Hispanics make heat, and the combustion between the two is always a possibility in the ghetto because the streets stay filled with a constant mix of homeboys and homegirls. There are those that make it out of this godforsaken hole, and win it if they do, the rest look on in disbelief, as if no one is supposed to exit without leaving a path for them to follow, even though they put up every conceivable obstacle to keep everyone in the same stinking hole. In this hellhole, in this place of sin and filth, where you could find your most loyal friends or your worst enemies, was where Jumbo lived on the top floor of a building run by one of the many slumlords in the city. Jumbo had gotten the nickname from the streets because of his appearance. His real name was Gerard, but nobody called him that except for family. He was a big man, about 250 pounds on a 6'4" frame. His presence was quite intimidating, even though he didn't mean it to be. He wasn't an ugly person, but he was hard to look at because of his golden hazel eyes against his dark skin, which often caused people to stare at him or quickly look away. He kept his head shaven and wore a small diamond ring in his right ear. His home consisted of two rooms, a living room and a bedroom. His bathroom was small, and a kitchenette was incorporated into the living room. It was enough for him. Jumbo rested on his bed and set an agenda in his mind for the rest of the day. The hint of daylight bearing down through the cracks of his blinds was enough to wake the dead, so there was no sense trying to get any more sleep. He stood up and stretched. After he relieved himself, he rummaged through his music collection and decided it was a Stevie Wonder kind of day. He skipped through the cuts until he found the one he wanted. Stevie's I Wish track rang out of the speakers. Jumbo rocked his head to the old school beats and went into his routine of 150 sit-ups, 50 push-ups, and another 30 minutes on his stationary bike. This had been his morning ritual for as long as he could remember. Then I'm going to read the last paragraph in this section.
Wow.
Wow. Jumbo was what every working person dreamed about. He was his own boss, self-employed. He was a drug dealer and was quite profitable at it. Currently, he had about $300,000 stashed away of pure profit, which he kept in a hole in the floor. He didn't believe in banks. They left a trail. He liked his money where he could see it. He wanted to be able to buy a fat house without a mortgage payment and have a good amount of money left over so he wouldn't have to work again unless he wanted to. I'm going to leave it there.
You know what? She going to leave it there.
I'm going to leave it there.
That is so suspenseful. I love your writing. You have a very vivid imagination and a way of bringing the writer right to that place. So you have a very descriptive way of writing, and I love it. That's what I loved about when I started reading your youth novella, Big Mistake. It was that same feeling that, you know, you're right there and, you know, it's relatable. It's not like you're trying to fit in with, you know, the genre or the dialect or whatever, you know, the terminology, if you will, the street terminology or the code words or what have you. It's like you have it down pat. So now take us to where you grew up, because you didn't just imagine that. No. take us to Jackie Gardner personally, excuse me, and for our listeners that are just tuning in, that was an excerpt from Jackie, a.k.a. J.C. Gardner's book, Sinful Liaisons, heard live on Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival 2, Love, Lust, and Lovers. And that's why we're keeping it late night, y'all. So
I know that's right.
Where are you getting these characters? Well, not where are you getting these characters, but tell us about growing up, how your personal life helps you develop these types of stories.
Well, I'm from New York. I was born in the, I always say this is my history in less than 30 seconds. Born in the Bronx, raised in Queens, went to school on Long Island, and worked in Manhattan. So I covered all of the boroughs except for Staten Island growing up in New York. And all of my writings, including Sinful Liaisons, are very multicultural for the most part, because that is how I see the world, because in New York is such a big melting pot of different cultures. I mean, I grew up with a lot of Spanish people, a lot of Puerto Ricans lived in my neighborhood, and we all got along fabulously. I mean, the bodega was on the corner. You know, in the Bronx, everything's easy to get to. You had different mixes of different cultures all in one little tight area. So a lot of that plays into the way that I write, because I recognize that it's not just one culture that either that's on the earth. We are all a mix of different cultures and different people. And I believe God wanted us to get along in that fashion too, that we shouldn't be isolating ourselves. So when I write, all of that comes into play. I'm always trying to make somebody see themselves in the story. So that's just my take, the way that I want to show different lives. So a lot of my stories will be multicultural. Even Big Mistake is multicultural. You know, we have, and that's the children's book, but in this particular book, in Sinful Liaisons, since we are late night, yes, indeed, we have African-Americans, we have Jamaicans, we have people from Puerto Rico, you know, we have white people, we have a lot of different cultures and mixes in the book, because I just, like I said, I want people to feel comfortable, and I also, you know, I really believe it's a representation of where we live in the world, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it is a true representation, because, you know, America is a melting pot, you know, and the world as a whole is becoming smaller and smaller, and more diversity is being seen, more
you know, nationalities are uniting and coming together. So it's always, you know, refreshing to see that come out in someone's work and to, you know, emulate, like you said, how you grew up. And
yes.
So that is awesome. That is awesome. So you said that there was a part two. Tell us what you
Lord.
Can. Tell us what you can without giving it away about, you know, the continued character's life.
Yes. Okay. So I'll give a little bit away about Simple Liaisons, the first book, so that it'll make sense when I talk about the second one. But in the first one, like I said, David Jarconi is a very fine white boy. Like if you was to have a white boy in your mind, the epitome of fine, tall, tanned, gray-eyed, dark-haired, he looks so good. He's model material. However, he doesn't want to follow any of the path that his parents have laid for him. His parents are wealthy and rich. Now, this is going to sound a lot like have and have nots, but I guarantee you my book was out before that. I just want to say
I heard that.
So, and I've had people tell me that, like, oh, my God, this is like the have and have nots. And I'm like, I know, but I don't think the show is a take on my book. I want to say that, too. I just want to say there are some similar characteristics where I have a very rich family that happens to be white that also has a son that is really bad. He's just off the hook. He doesn't want to do anything. His parents tell him, and his parents own a very successful company in New York. But when he goes to the company, like I mentioned earlier, he runs into a beautiful model, a beautiful African-American model, and him and her hit it off really well, but the problem is he has this very shady past, okay? And the past catches up to him. I mean, we're talking about a lot of murder, mayhem, lies, and all kind of craziness that happens because of this model that he runs into. So what happens in book two, it kind of continues because at the end of book one, I don't leave a cliffhanger, but I let you know that there's a lot of unfinished business that needs to be cleaned up because of David's past. So it's called Sinful Liaisons, Unfinished Business. It's been written for 2 years. I have it in a big binder. It's been written. I just have to have time to get it edited because I do believe that your work should be professionally edited before you even put it out there in the world. Because, you know, I want to give the reader my best. And a lot of people have asked me for the sequel, which makes me feel really good. So, but I also want to give them my best work.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I understand that because, you know, I'm a firm believer that once you've read your own work over and over and over, you cannot possibly still see everything that's there because it's in your mind. And so you're going to read words like the that may not be there because you have it in your mind and you can easily skip over something that's missing. So I'm a firm believer as well that another set of eyes other than the author should review and edit the work where needed, especially for punctuation and things like that. So we definitely appreciate all that you bring, not only in terms of perfection, like you said, the way you want to bring your work to the forefront, your second book, Sinful Liaisons, Unfinished Business, which really sounds intriguing. But then also I look at the level of, you know, quality in, you know, the work that I have here with me. And I want to thank you right here on Tribe Family Channel for the packet that you sent me, three books, and my mentor just gave her 6-year-old nephew a copy of Big Mistake
yesterday.
For Palm Sunday, and so they're going to be reading that because he, you know, of course he can't read at that level yet, he's only 6, but the message is, and the seeds are being planted, and so you know, like I said, the level of quality that I see in your work, I cannot wait to see what your second, you know, installment of sinful liaisons is going to be like, and I'm definitely going to be, you know, looking out for that. Now, if our listeners want to get an early catch-up on pre-ordering your book or just connecting with you, you know, ordering your current copy, where can they find you at? Where are you at on social media?
I am on Facebook. You can find me at Jackie Gardner on Facebook. You can find me at JC Gardner on Facebook as well. Also on Twitter at JC Gardner 1. And I'm on LinkedIn, although I am not a big LinkedIn fan, but I do visit LinkedIn every now and then. But Twitter and Facebook are my main social media outlets. But I do want to let you know, Beverly, that between Simple Liaisons and the one that's Unfinished Business, I do have a dramedy I'm hoping will be available this summer. It's an adult book. It's a novelette, and it's called
mm-hmm.
Heated. And I'm very happy. I'm very proud of that particular book because it shows my humorous side. I have a humorous side of things. So it has comedy, it has drama, and hello, it's edited, and it's in the second phase of editing. And after that,
mm-hmm.
I should be ready to go to the publishers, and that'll also be available on my website as well. And Simple Liaisons and Big Mistake are both on Amazon as well.
That is awesome. And you know what? I'm going to be looking out for that because I love a good laugh as well, you know, and with life imitating or with art imitating life, I know that, you know, this dramedy is going to have, you know, images of life and things that, you know, happen that we can consider a, you know, drama. But, you know, sometimes you even have to laugh at the drama that goes down in your life. Am I right?
That's the truth. For most of you be sitting around crying, you got to sit back and laugh sometimes. You know, you'd be like, wow, really? Okay. You know, so.
Yes, exactly. Well, did you want to give us a little excerpt of your, yes, of Heated?
Oh, my God. I love Heated so much. Now, the reason why I love that book, I love it so much, is because these characters, to me, are real life characters. We're talking about a single mother who's struggling with three kids. She's just trying to make ends meet, and she can't seem to catch a break. You know, so finally she's getting ready to get back on her feet, only to have some other things happen to her that, you know, shakes her faith. And then at the same time, one of her baby daddies is off the hook, you know, but him and his friend, they always have these harebrained money-raising schemes that don't work. So that's where some of the comedy comes in, with these two guys, you know, in the background, trying to make ends meet in their way, which is never the right way. It's always going to turn out to be wrong. But the way that I depict them, I know it's people like this that other people know, and that's why this is very close to my heart. In addition to the comedy side. But I don't know if my sister's listening, but I also drew on some of my sister's personality for some of the characters in the story, for one character in particular in the story. It's the main character, her name is Geraldine, and her sister's
mm-hmm.
name is Carmella. And I drew on my sister.
Well,
we do have some
we do have some listeners calling with your area, with the same area code that you are calling from. So when we open up the phone lines, we're going to see who they are, okay?
Okay, but Carmella, the sister, I drew on some of my sister's personality. Katrina, if you're listening, yes, that's right, you in here. So... she'll be like, oh, my God, because I never told her that. But some of her characteristics, I, like, took them and put them on steroids. So that's what that, and my sister can be really, really funny. So, you know.
Awesome.
I can read an excerpt if you want.
Absolutely. Please go ahead and bless us on Tribe Family Channel.
This is a first because no one has heard anything about this book, Eat It. So this is from chapter 3, and this is Geraldine, the main character. And by the way, this book is different for me, too, because I've written it from Geraldine's perspective and the baby daddy, Antoine's perspective. So in one sense, but you'll always know who's talking. So in one sense, you're reading what Geraldine is thinking, and then you're going to flip and see what Antoine is thinking, and that's where it gets real funny. So this is Geraldine. She is waiting on her sister to arrive, because she has a job interview, and she's very excited, but she's nervous. So she's opening the door, and she says, "Thank God, I didn't think you were coming. Did I have a choice?" My sister Carmela marched in, still dressed in her hospital scrubs, having worked as a double shift as a nurse's assistant. Carmela closely resembled our father, with light skin and a spattering of freckles on both cheeks. Her hair was long and thin, as was her frame. The joke was, since I was older, I stole her curves and she got the leftovers. If I could, I'd gladly give her an extra portion of breasts and hips. She took our daddy's height at a little over 5'8", and also his temperament. My sister was so pretty to me, but right now she was a tea at the market, rocking back and forth on the couch and freaked out. "Oh, hell no. Is this boy off his meds?" I tried to remain calm as the hairs on the back of my neck began to rise. I breathed deeply, suddenly aware of the nerve endings under my skin. I willed them to be still, and within seconds, the feeling was gone. I spoke soft but sternly. "Can you lower your voice? I don't want him to hear you." "What? I don't give a rat's ass about what he hears. Is this boy off his meds or not?" She was still loud, hands on hips, clearly distressed. I tried to overlook her attitude. I checked my bag, making sure I had an extra copy of my resume handy, tissues in my compact. He was with his daddy, and you know how that goes. She cocked her neck. "I know how that goes. I don't know shit. I never understood why you hooked up with his trifling ass in the first place. And you know I can't watch this boy like this. I swear." And she continued talking aloud to herself as my eyes followed her, and she went down the hall to the bathroom, opened and closed in the vanity cabinet, then the medicine cabinet. Then she came to the kitchen on some scavenger hunt, looking for God knows what. I finally asked, exasperated, "What are you looking for? Some NyQuil? You sick? It's for that boy. His ass needs to go to sleep." And I'm going to end it there.
OMG, that was nice. That was nice. Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuned in live on Tribe Family Channel with my guest, JC, a.k.a. Jackie Gardner, and she just finished reading an excerpt of her upcoming novel, Heated. So
yes,
we're going to open up the phone lines. I see some callers, 410-48-408. And we're going to take this first caller, area code 410, prefix 521. Area code 410, are you there? Area code 410, are you there? All right.
Hello.
Well, it looks like,
there,
caller?
Hi, Jackie. This is Dee.
Hi, Dee. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited for you, and I can't wait to read that comedy.
I can't wait for y'all to get it. It's really funny. It's a very funny book. I should
it
say
sounds
this too,
like it.
Dee is one of my sister girlfriends, my close sister girlfriends I've known for many years. I appreciate you tuning in. I know this is late for you, but the reason I need to tell you all this, the reason why it's called Heated is because, in addition to Geraldine being down on her luck and a single mother, she's been cursed with a family lineage or a genealogy of going through early menopause. It's just her family tree. Yes. So there's a lot of references to being hot and heated, but it's really based on the fact that she's going change of life early on, earlier than normal, and then she's dealing with all these other things in the process. So that's where the
title comes. That is a wonderful tie-in. And hi, Dee, over there. This is Beverly, yours truly,
hi,
the creator of Tribe Family.
Nice
hi, it's a pleasure
Beverly.
To meet you. And you as well. You as well. Thank you so much for calling in. Yes, that sounds like a very exciting. Thank you. That sounds like a very exciting book. I just cannot wait. I love your writing, JC. I love your writing. So I'm with D. I can't wait. I can't wait. D, did you want to say anything else to JC?
No, but I can relate to the early menopause. That's all I'm gonna say.
Well, I'm going to say this, too. I can sling the covers on and off, get up, turn the heater on, turn the heater off, turn the air on, turn the air off.
Going through the motions.
I miss my ceiling fan.
Yes. No, and Beverly D is one of the contributors to the Girls Are Priceless brochure.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, we just, you know, thank you very much for calling, Dee, and thank you for your contribution.
You're welcome.
Two Girls Are Priceless, and continue to listen, all right?
Will do. Have a great night, ladies.
You too.
And
thank
you as well.
All
right. Bye-bye.
That is so awesome. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, this is the second half of our literary festival from Tribe Family Channel, Love, Lovers, and Lust, late night on Tribe Family Channel. We have to do it late night because we don't need the kids in our business, just like they don't want us in theirs. So these are some wonderful novels. Like I said, I love your writing style. And we're coming up on the end of the show. So give a shout out to you know, anyone that you might want to give a shout out to, and give our listeners your social media and your website again so that they can pre-order your upcoming novels, get the ones that are already out, and definitely connect with your self-empowering girls movement, girlsarepriceless.com. Hey.
Yes, yes, indeed. So I just want to give a shout out to anyone that took time to tune in to tonight's program. I so appreciate you and your support. Y'all know, especially those that know me personally, that this has been a really long journey. But like I have said before, and I keep saying it, what God has placed in your heart, no one can take away. Writing is definitely part of my DNA. And I know that you all who are listening, I appreciate everything that you've done, being there for me, reading my stuff, proofreading it, looking it over, passing the word along. I really do appreciate that. And those who I don't know that are listening, I'm so glad that you all tuned in, and I hope that you take the time to discover your destiny and follow your passion and your dreams, and don't wait another day, because tomorrow is certainly not promised. And yes, Beverly has talked about girlsarepriceless.com. That is coming to a city near you. That is going to be a brand new website for girls empowerment, girls resources, a way for young ladies to find information. It's going to be a little different, though, because it's going to be a way for young ladies to find information that's real and down to earth, that talks on their level versus, I want to say, textbooks. So it's going to be different. It's going to take a little time, and we can't wait to launch it. And the other thing that I am, another initiative really that I'm a part of, is Genius is Common, which is everyone has a genius. Everyone is genius. Everyone has something that they do for them, that they do that nobody else can do. As I've said before, only you can tell your story. Only you can walk your walk, and only you can talk your talk, and only you are able to make certain things happen, because that is your genius. That is what you were born with. That is your specialty, Common. And, yes, you can find me on www.booksbyjcg.com and Twitter at JCGardner1 and on Facebook. Yay, Beverly!
Hey, yay, hey. And also, you can tune in and connect with Tribe Family Channel at our main site, tribefamilychannel.com. You can visit our parent company, Gumbo for the Soul International, at gumbofortheSoul.com. We're also on Twitter at Gumbo for the Soul, and also Tribe Family Channel at Tribe Family US. I am the creator and host, yours truly, Beverly, and I want you to tune in to our ongoing festival all spring long. on Tribe Family Channel. Go to tribefamilychannel.com, scroll down to Literary Festival 2, and click on there to stay updated. We have best-selling author Sister Pat Giorgi coming up. We also have Joy Lynn Ross, and we also have Patricia Bridewell, to name a few. So be sure to connect with us for our ongoing literary festival, Love, Lovers, and Lust Late Night on Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival. JC, thank you so much once again, my sister. It has been a joy, honor, and privilege speaking with you once again on Tribe Family Channel. And we're going to close out this show with Love's Holiday. We're going to give a big heart sign to the sky to our dearly departed Maurice White, lead singer of Earth, Wind, and Fire. And we thank him for his artistry and his legendary work throughout the years, giving us music like Love's Holiday. Enjoy your evening, everyone. This is yours truly, Beverly.
Thank you, Beverly. Have a blessed evening. Everyone take care.
And you as well, Jackie. God bless you. Much love, all.
If I kiss, if I held you tight in the morning light, yeah. Would you mind if I said how I felt in the lead tonight? Would you mind if I look?